and welcome to episode 388 of the Spitballing Pod. I'm Luke Byron, joined as always by Tom Kennett and Jack Harper. Plenty to get into this week. It was anything but super on Sunday as both Liverpool and Arsenal dropped points in their quest for the title. Tottenham Hotspur were swept aside by Newcastle as they faltered in their hunt for a top four finish. Manchester United dropped points again as they attempt to end the season with some dignity. And Jack's only sat here with a smile on his face because Chelsea haven't played yet. UFC 300 also delivered in all areas as we had big knockouts, insane moments, and just enough ridiculousness to satisfy all audiences. But I'll ask you first, TK, how are you doing today?
Yeah, a bit of a redundant question.
Better than you thought you'd be doing.
What, did the Arsenal result pick me up? Was that the...
That was the feeling I was getting from most Liverpool fans.
Surely it would annoy you more that you could have gone ahead of Arsenal.
Well, I can kind of reassure myself that if we had won, Arsenal would also have won. Yeah. It's just one of those things you can tell yourself. I thought we'd agreed we were like pivoting and becoming like a tennis podcast now. I thought that was it. We don't follow football. We got French Open coming up. We'll talk about that. We're not talking about football anymore. I thought that was the agreement.
Well, we were at the Arrows last week. We did get the Spitballing Pod sign on TV. I've had some criticism about the handwriting on the sign. I don't know whose that was. I was in the toilet at the time. Was it yours?
No, because okay. I said, well, don't put my writing on there because no one's going to understand it.
But we got there, snuck in behind Luke Littler's head, thanks to the help of a Leicester fan that was there. Told him I was a fan of KDH, and he said, give me that sign, mate. And he got it behind his head, so there you go. The KDH fandom carries.
Thing is, I hope he doesn't go away thinking, oh, he said that to button me up, didn't he? He's like, no, he really does. I like this guy.
Jack, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good. Like you said, Chelsea haven't played yet.
The most chipper I've seen you in a while, I've got to say.
Monday night football is probably the best slot for us because I can enjoy the weekend's football. Because what usually happens if we play early kickoff on a Saturday, we obviously drop points / lose. I then can't watch the rest of the football with any kind of joy or vigour. And yesterday was one of the best hate watches to end all hate watches. It was glorious.
It felt for me how I imagine Liverpool fans felt after the 6-1 United loss to...
Yeah, I thought you were going to go with that one.
That was how I imagined it felt. Although, I'd say a tougher opposition. I guess Villa that season weren't supposed to be... Villa now are better than...
They weren't supposed to dick us like that, in fairness.
No, whereas if you'd listened to me for the past week, you may have heard me say that about Sheffield, admittedly, so the effect has worn off slightly. But
yeah, when you're saying every week about a team that's top of the league, it's a tough one to marry up.
I knew you and I had something for us, unfortunately.
Boy, did he.
Just to maybe give an indication into the kind of episode we're going to have here, I sat there completely depressed following the football yesterday, as you can imagine. And I was trying to decide on what film to watch as I put all the options into my Wheel of Fortune and I spin it. And as each film pops up, I eliminate it and it's Last Man Standing. And then I have like a real debate sometimes where one film gets eliminated and then I realise that's really the film I wanted to watch. But can't disobey the wheel.
Oh, okay. So, I thought you were going to say, then I go and watch that. I was like, the wheel's pointless. No, fair enough.
So
respect.
I stick with what we've got. As I'm sure you both thought straight away, yes, I had the realisation... The juice from the David Luiz shirt wore off. So thanks to the both of you for that, for putting some kind of jinx on it, as I mentioned it. But no, I removed Top Gun Maverick because I've heard that's a bit too chirpy. I'm sure there's going to be a depressing moment, but I know we'll get there in the end. So I took that away from there. I added Past Lives and Before Midnight back into the rotation because I thought, let me just suffer with this.
Good God.
Ended on Black Hawk Down, which I thought, Stunk.
Blimey.
Yeah, not for me. Ridley Scott, the more I watch of your work, we should have just left it at Gladiator, basically.
I thought it was pretty stock sort of that type
was,
of film.
That was kind
film.
Of my issue, was that there was no building of who anyone was. It was very much just experience this moment. And so as years have gone on, which was kind of my criticism of Blade Runner, which they can't have helped at the time, I've now seen better, so that doesn't really sell it for me. But there's the Black Hawk Down review if anyone was looking for that.
Movie Madness is back for 1 minute.
1917 was in there. I'd have gone back in for Iron Claw if I could. That was where we were.
That would have been a dangerous film on that night.
Do any of you intentionally watch depressing films? We can't run back GTA. That can't be a weekly feature. So I'm just trying to give you a bit of something before we get to the football.
I don't think I intentionally watch depressing films. I mean,
does it put you off though? Like, because you know some films going in, like going into Iron Claw, I was quite well aware.
I didn't know fully just how. My word.
I mean,
but when they say suicide references in that, I mean, I think they should give you more than just that. It's not just that. Sorry, Karen. Yeah.
I mean, the only sad... I mean, I watch sad films.
But you're not going out of your way to do it. No. In your most depressing moment, you don't go, I'm going to make this worse.
Like, he was differentiating between sad films and depressing films. I'm, like, there was levels.
I mean, when I'm... I mean, most weeks after a Chelsea horror show, I can't really function. So I just sit there in a daze, just staring at the wall on autopilot. I don't have the cognitive ability to be able to go, I'm going to put a Wheel of Fortune on and see what comes out. I just sit there and hope that I don't wake up the next day.
You load up Phantom Menace and hope Qui-Gon lives this time. Coming back to
maybe next time.
I genuinely think
back in cinemas in a few weeks after his slating of it.
I mean, the sequels have put it into a really good light.
So you're saying they're bad enough that they've made this?
Yeah.
So disrespectful.
By proxy.
I saw an interview with Daisy Ridley recently where she was asked, you know, how was it? And she was like, well, obviously not ideal because we thought they were going to be quite good. And you kind of hope that with each one, maybe it'll be a bit more like it. And then she said, yeah, you got to the end and they took some chances.
I mean, we could do a whole pod on the sequels. I mean, Movie Madness, I'll be more than happy to go through all of the Star Wars and what's wrong with them.
I still wish I could have seen Keenan's face as you stopped me to correct the terrain on Tatooine during an episode that we did.
Because how does a planet...
We do Revenge of the Sith.
That's just sand. How does it generate oxygen? I don't understand.
That's where the line's being drawn on these films.
Like Coruscant. I mean, a city that covers the entire span of the planet. The fossil fuels, the fumes, the smog.
I can't see why there isn't more clamour for this podcast to come back. Once had 7 minutes of Jack explaining how he could have survived in Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. Including calculations.
And the one in The Hobbit where Legolas runs up the falling bridge.
No, we won't go back to that again.
Jack just asking who's putting the bins out every Monday on each of these films. I never see it, so what's going on?
Yeah, I was still... Papa and Muchachos, I've settled into a routine at this point, even with the same order each time, because they're back letting me get the garlic and herb dips with the Papa. They had a bit of a malfunction there. They answered my query. We're back in business. So there really is nothing much to report on.
Muchachos delivering to you now?
Uber Eats. So I've got the little free trial to take a bit of money off delivery and the service charge because... That's outrageous that you can have the money in your basket. You go to process it and it says, by the way, here's an extra like £3 we're adding on.
Sometimes it's more.
Because
sometimes
we want to get some money.
It's £2.50 service charge, £2.50 delivery. So you think, £28, that's not too bad. £32, no way.
Yeah.
Take something out of that basket.
Yeah, there's a thing for when it goes past 25, like £22.70 is like...
I need some remarkable service to be having that sort of charge.
Yeah. Each time they get to the door, they say, review. And I say, check what you've got there. I've given you the best review you're ever going to have. No one else is talking about the crispness of your nuggets.
It's provocative. Yes.
Anyway, should we start in order? Should we go with Liverpool Palace first? Do you want to start with that? And maybe I can live in the knowledge that maybe our game hasn't happened
maybe
yet.
You can prolong the Liverpool game so we don't have time to talk about the Arsenal.
Oh, no.
Maybe.
We'll talk about that Arsenal game.
Okay, sound. Yeah.
And then Spurs and United to make us feel a bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
If it does. Pretty easy question. Why did Liverpool start so slowly in games at the moment?
It's a great question. Yeah, it's...
$1 million question.
How quickly the stat of our comebacks has been turned and used against us now. Because for so long, it was look how much fortitude they're obviously showing to keep doing this. And then it was, you can't keep going behind. And Carragher kind of forecast it pre-game, didn't he, saying this?
Well, I think we said it at the time, because I remember during one of the overlaps, and not that I like complaining about Carragher, but I'd remembered him last season saying, quite rightfully, winning the most points from behind is not really, at this stage of the season, a league table you want to be top of.
Yeah.
And yours is like, there's second place and then there's you. Like, yeah. It's 1920.
Yeah. Fucking having a great time.
And so, yeah, happens again here. I don't know how it feels for you, because I had it with us last season, it obviously kept happening as it's a pretty similar pattern. And still going into each game, I don't think I was necessarily expecting it, but the second it happens, it's like, not again.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty well. I wasn't shocked when they scored. Because obviously earlier in Klopp's time, we used to start like a train. You do also start kind of simultaneously go into a game thinking, well, maybe we'll do that today. Mm. Whilst also knowing that for long periods of time, we haven't started well. We haven't a lot of the time this season. Obviously last season, we often didn't start or finish games well. We were just working generally.
I was just going to say, for us, I'm in the same mindset as you, knowing we're not coming back from it.
Yeah.
So it's like, there we go, game over.
I actually think it's a bit worse as the last real comparative in this sense, is that some of the ones we were conceding last season were from just like pure shenanigans, like the ones where something happens with Ramsdale, or there's like a weird back pass, or there was something happening. There was ones like from a kickoff routine or something. Some of the ones that you've conceded at the start of games recently, it's you're being played through. Yeah. It's not something where you can go, that was us being idiots, which I'm sure there's parts of it you can break down and say, why is he pressed forward? Why is it done this?
Definitely.
It's like the same issues are happening. You're being played through. Yes, that's really nice football from Palace to set up the goal.
Yeah, it's a really nice goal, but then like no midfield runs were being tracked at all. So Eze just had, I'll just wander into the box and it's that one in, which is something I spoke about even when, you know, earlier in the season when we were winning games. I did say like no one is really following runners here, even when Endo plays, who's one of the more defensively minded midfielders.
The space he had in front of the cop was just, I couldn't quite believe.
If he had missed it, because he couldn't have believed how much time and space he had.
Yeah, and it was slow motion almost when the ball was pulled back, where it's, you've been watching him wander in on full screen in HD. You're watching him wander in, thinking, no, someone's going to run to him in a second, surely.
Yeah. The players kind of, their body language looks like they're kind of not shocked when we concede quite early on now as well. And it's kind of, I don't know if it's like taking pride in your defending or what, but I don't know how many people have actually like pissed when it happens. Like Van Dijk seems pissed. He's normally asking who's following, whatever. Other than that, I kind of look around and go like, which of those, even like the midfielders going like, oh fuck, that was my fault. I've got to put my hand up and go, I should have been following this man. It's kind of, yeah, is it a team that really takes pride in its defending? For example, Arsenal, I think you kind of look at it and you go, yeah, I think they take real pride in keeping a clean sheet or whatever. I kind of think it's kind of, if we can, great, but if not, we'll probably get a couple of goals and get ourselves out of trouble, is the mindset in the players. And obviously, if you don't get those goals, then where'd you end up?
Not been a good week for that on our part, unfortunately.
Bad one for, maybe bad week to use you as a reference point.
Happened last season where most fans knew it, but they weren't really doing it on TV. I remember them saying least goals conceded from set pieces, and April hit and it was every single set piece was going in the back of the net somehow. You've now played 51 games this season in all competitions. You've conceded first in 21 of those.
I actually think the stat
is worse if it's just league games, but I don't have that. I think I sent it yesterday at some point. It just makes even the most routine of games feel like sapping occasions.
Everything's a chore, isn't it? And I kind of, the first time we ended up going toe-to-toe with City, we had a lot of games where we went from behind and came back and won. And meanwhile, City were kind of doing their thing pretty routine. And I kind of felt at that time like, oh, look, we're probably going to run out of steam doing this, because you can't do that all the time. And they're winning games a lot more sort of casually. And as it happened, I don't think we did run out of steam that season. We look like we might be this year. It looks like a team that is running out of steam a little bit.
I think that's a lot to be said, isn't it, when you compare and contrast the two playing styles of City, actual energy exertion over a season where the whole team is camped in the box, they're passing it methodically. There's not many bursts. It's very much byline cut back, and they've got
the amount of possession they have in games is walking football at times for some of them.
Exactly, whereas heavy metal football can only keep up for so long, and every season gets longer with the competitions you're in. And we're not even, we're 7-8 games from the end of it, and you've already played 51 of that with the injuries you've had. That could be another reason why Man City haven't had many injuries because they're not... That fast twitch muscle fibre isn't being tested because they're just walking it, controlling, condensing games.
Well, there isn't a single manager that's ever played one of Jurgen Klopp's sides that hasn't said something to the degree of how much they admire their style of football. If you were to go through those managers and look at the way they play and see how many of them actually choose to play like that, they love this style of football so much, but none of them choose to play like it. Even the teams that are the best in their divisions. We've got teams that are in far less stretched leagues than we have that don't play like that. Like Bayern Munich don't play like that in the Bundesliga because you have to have the best players to do it. You have to have a lot of luck with injuries. And really, it just, if you're playing the numbers, it's just not the way you want. Arteta and Pep as the two examples in this league. Watching, if they had to be the manager of Liverpool
for a week,
that, they would hate it.
Because there's just not enough control, is there?
And there is something in that because Liverpool sides have played this way with more control.
That's it, previously. We're not playing the perfect brand of Klopp football at this point because the year we do win the league, we had that perfect sort of balance of, I've said before, that we could manage games when we did go ahead. We didn't just go, we're going to keep going forward. We didn't look stretched like we do in a lot of games this season.
I will say now, though, because it has been very easy and has been the I told you so as in have been all over the shop in the last 24 hours. Liverpool are still, 2 points off the top of the league, playing this way as it stands. So it isn't the big kind of gotcha that everyone thinks it is, but it's just so many people have been saying it for a while that you don't have to do it like this. That, as I said, I
do think as well, we're kind of in an anomaly period where you look back to Arsenal United, Chelsea United kind of title races, there would be drop points in the run to the end of it. It's now that the two main challenges have drop points the same week and everyone's just gone, you know what happens now. Because in any other period of not just the Premier League, but English football, you can afford to lose a game with seven games left and be 2 points behind thinking, well, they're not going to win all their games.
Yeah, if you had six games still to play with 2 points behind the lead, you'd say, like, oh, this is a great position to be in.
Yeah.
But because it's City, you're just like, oh, they're freaks.
Yeah. The Daily Mail posted an article yesterday and their caption was, it's advantage Man City in a Premier League title race where three teams are falling over themselves to lose. Now,
I'm not quite sure about that. Yeah.
The top three playing...
Well, this is the first time you've dropped points in however long. First time we've dropped points in.
The top three against the other 17 teams this year. City have got 31 from 33 points. Arsenal have got 27 from 30. Liverpool have got 28 from 33.
It's not... yeah. It's, are we falling over each other?
It's ridiculous. And, I mean, we're both feeling pretty bleak after what has happened. But the margins is that we were the best team in the league 24 hours ago and now we're bottle jobs because you lose one game.
Pretty insane.
And Liverpool, you know, completely ran out of steam, but 4 or 5 days ago, you were going to win potentially a treble.
And the thing is, like, we weren't good in this game and yet we still had four, I would say, clear-cut chances where you go, yeah, you have to score that.
I cannot believe... So it just looked jinxed, almost.
I could not believe... When the Curtis Jones one happened, you're like, well, we are not scoring today. We are not scoring. Like, that was obviously brutal.
I think that translated...
Darwin, Mo, Jota, all of them had a chance where you were like, I can't believe that hasn't gone in.
Yeah.
And you can say a great save or great block, but it's like, it doesn't matter, that shouldn't have happened.
I think that translated to both the team and the fans.
Yeah.
Because with each miss, that sentiment became ever more evident.
It's not today, sort of.
If a chance gets put away early in the second half, you win that game like 5-1.
If we'd scored any time probably pre 88, 89 minutes, one goal, I think we get the second, don't we? But it's just,
The last team that didn't score at Anfield were United, but December 17th was the last time you kept a clean sheet at home.
And they barely left their own half. Yeah.
So in terms of the chances you did miss, as you say, Klopp commented on it and said, we didn't actually play badly in the second half. It's just we were so bad in the first half because the Mateta miss, the one that Andy Robertson clears off the line, Palace would have been good value for a 2-0 lead at that stage.
Yeah.
I can't believe we were robbed of a Slippy V moment.
You're telling me.
I cannot believe it.
one of very few centre-halves to get spared this weekend, Virg, with that one. Mm. Everyone else seemed to
the way know what was coming to him. I felt last season when we conceded a diving header to a man that would struggle at West Midlands Safari Park.
What's he struggling at the Safari Park?
Have you got the rides at West Midlands Safari Park?
Is that your go-to for roller coasters?
Well, they're all little kids' coasters, a little twister one there.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't carry you. Could use a better example. But
Alton Towers, I think everyone gets it then.
Drayton Manor, just to really dig into him.
Famously prefer Drayton Manor to Alton Towers.
Yeah?
Yeah. The man between the sticks for Crystal Palace, any sense of your part that maybe it was a little to do with you?
Yeah, I've got to take a little bit of that, haven't I? Yes, properly. Me and my big mouth had it again.
Because you've been nasty to that man through the years.
Yeah.
We've all enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah, he here last longest, D. Henderson. Fair play to you.
Darwin Núñez set the tone, obviously, with his close-range attempt from the corner, I believe it is, that Virg knocks down and smashes straight at Henderson. And at what point in the game was it the Curtis Jones one where you were like, okay, it really might be one of those days? Because they went early on comms, like 20 minutes in, they were saying, it might just be one of those days for Liverpool. And it's like,
yeah.
We can't go that early with that.
The hilarious thing being, if you are an opposition fan watching this, you're going, well, obviously it's going to come for Liverpool. It's obviously going to come. Let's have this many chances. It's going to go in and then we'll get a second one. Mm. And if you're a Liverpool fan watching, you're going, I don't even need to watch the rest of this. I know we're not scoring. And so there's two contrasting sort of views of it. The problem with us is obviously the United games are the ones being focused on because we've gone out of the cup and we dropped points to them. But it was a similar story in the Brighton game in between that, in the Sheffield United game. Just because we got over the hump on those, they're not getting any attention. But kind of narrowly getting through those games is a bit of a warning sign. And I said this to you before we played, so I'm not just saying it after the event. That in any of these games against teams like Palace or Wolves, someone like that, if you play like that sort of way against them, they hang in there. It's really hard to beat. And it seems weird to say that Palace were really hard to break down considering the number of chances we did end up having. But they were also really hard to break down.
You almost always, a team that plays that kind of way, get some luck on their side. It's very rare. Like some of the performances we've had this season where opposition just haven't had a shot. There's no team at that end of the table that is doing that against one of these big sides.
It's no coincidence, really, that they do get an unbelievable block here and there, because when you're putting that many people in your own box, eventually, you know.
The best example I'd probably use of that, and obviously a lot higher up in the table, is the West Ham one against us at Christmas, where we had, 40 shots, but none of them were ever really, and it never really felt like we were going to score. So this one, it just felt like, the one I was still convinced you were going into 85 minutes, and like you said, I thought, well, if you get one, then you're going to get another, and then the one Jota misses where I was like, okay, maybe that, there's something going on here.
That was exactly, exactly the same sort of point. Such as when a block like that goes in, you're like, oh, God. And especially because it's Jota who's come on. The whole point is he's our best finisher probably. He's coming back from injury. He's got as clear a cut chance as you could want.
Those are the ones as well you look back on and you think, anywhere else to the left of the keeper?
Exactly.
Why did it have to go there?
Yeah.
Why?
Exactly that.
Turns out I needn't have worried, but there was a point where it was very late on where I remembered the stories last year about United, which is hilarious now looking back, that internally they claim their season was derailed when we come back against Bournemouth. They started to believe they were back in the title race. We were playing them a week later and they say they were so knocked back that we had this comeback that it put, this is, you can read this.
That's insane.
You can read this in the Telegraph, the Mail, in so many. And I was thinking, people say, you know, they don't focus on the other results. If there's a part of us in the dressing room seeing you behind and you score two in the last five, well, that's going to knock us for six before we go out and play Villa.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
It actually did the opposite effect in some senses. But in terms of the players you have there, I don't know which one you deem to be the biggest chance. The Curtis Jones one, I mean, has he got too much time? Is it because he's such a technical player as well that you would think this is going to be one, you know.
And if you'd seen this sort of phase of it just about to happen and you'd say he doesn't end up scoring here, I would have said something like, look, he's not slow, but the defender could have caught up with him. I said, okay, the defender caught him and he didn't get it. You go, if he's in one-on-one like that, or, I don't know, got an arm on his shoulder and did one of those ones where he's not going to give a foul, but he puts him off just enough with the finish. There was nothing like that. It was, he couldn't have been any clearer through. Yeah, like you said, I don't know if it was too much time or what. In my mind, it was already in the bottom corner. When he put it in there, I thought, that's bottom corner. I'm already off nearly celebrating. And maybe my fault again.
It's like on FIFA, isn't it? Where you clean through and you've held B for too long and you see it go past the post and you throw your controller at the wall. It's one of those moments.
Do you think Salah has done enough in recent weeks? Because come back from injury, I know, but these superstar players don't really get that leeway to do it. And so when you're in these games where someone can't find something, he's the guy expected, obviously, to pull someone out. And I thought he was especially quiet yesterday.
Yeah, he didn't have the best game. But he's kind of, he can sometimes do that, but then score anyway, which we obviously know. And in some, a lot of these games, he has been providing some assists or near assists that have been very good. But obviously, we haven't always been scoring some of them. So the stat sheet might look slightly different. We might have a slightly different perception of his performance. But overall, he hasn't been obviously his best, has he? Whether he's still recovering from that injury or whether kind of age is catching up with him.
I didn't screenshot it, but I just want to prepare you because it will make its way onto your timeline. There is a thread going around about Salah during the run-in.
Yeah.
You probably saw. I did try searching for it then to see if...
I think that's what I was just looking for, but it's the 18-19 campaign, 0 goals in 7 games, something like that. This season's been pretty poor. Carried by Mane. Yeah, which...
That's the narrative.
Yeah.
I want to know what the... running cutoff point is, because at this last season, I wondered it then.
Yeah,
at what point do we call it?
Well, people don't need much excuse to do the whole Mane versus Salah thing, which
I
think it was always closer than people first said because of maybe Salah's first season was so unbelievable. So it was always a bit closer than that appeared, but I think if you're saying Mane was better than Salah, you're probably trying to be a bit different. I think it's always been the ultimate conclusion.
The odd one that would say Firmino is better than both. Enjoyed that.
Because they can't do it without him. It's like, yeah, but also he can't really do his role without those two balling out either. So.
When you have both, it's also like, who cares? Like, last season, people, you know, I think Martinelli is better than Saka. Well, we've got both of them. I'm not too fussed, to be honest with you. You've got Madueke and Sterling.
Yeah,
how can you pick?
Yeah. And then the exact same position as you guys.
It's just such a weird spot to end up in because initially I was sort of like telling people, you know, like, this Mane guy is like looking good as well, just because like Salah's come in and hit the ground running. Like this guy is also like the year before he'd been our best player. Like, this guy is still that guy. And then since I've had to go, yeah, okay, but Salah, come on, let's all have a bit of perspective. He hasn't been good of late, has he? No.
If you're going to take any silver lining, Andy Robertson did look good yesterday. I said the week before I thought he looked a bit hesitant. I thought he's probably the best player that you had yesterday at both ends. You not agree?
He was okay. I think I could be jumping the gun here. I think he's on the slide. I think if... for those listening, Luke just is hoping that Andy Robertson is on the slide, apparently.
We're looking for a left back in the summer, which we'll get to, so we don't need you in the market as well.
Before you can say you might go in for him, so that'd be an odd.
Maybe.
That would be strange.
Your left side looked far more assured than the right. Palace routinely targeted Conor Bradley and Konate. Konate, I thought, ropey as hell. A lot of blame is put on Trent for his defensive abilities, but he's not in there at the moment. Is this a structural issue? If there's still an issue down the right-hand side, is it that you don't have another Van Dijk and Robertson?
Yeah.
But it was not so long back. I don't know if injuries or whatever. We had a conversation at the back end of last season and we said, you know, is next season the season that Konate actually becomes the guy? You actually posed the question. And said, is this going to be a thing? I don't know if you think he's kicked on like that, if you think they should maybe take in more responsibility, or if it is a structural thing. Is it just your right-hand side is weaker than the left?
Yeah, probably. I think teams have gone, because Van Dijk's been, if not back to his best this season, very close, I think. Teams have gone back to kind of going, well, don't go down that side, we'll go down the other. And it has tended to work out. If Quants has had a decent amount of game time, he's obviously still a young defender. Connor Bradley, if they're both down that side, obviously you're going to. And even now, they're going to do that. It doesn't matter if Connor Bradley's playing, Trent's playing, you're probably always going to go down that side. And then also sometimes it's personnel on that team. If you've got someone like Eze, sometimes he is going to have a lot of the ball and go for it down that side. Palace, you'd think, you look at it and go, Elise on one side, Eze on the other, you can kind of go it that way. But as you've seen with Arsenal, often it does just kind of end up, one of the guys ends up shining a little bit more on any given day. It's just Saka and Martinelli don't always ball out in the same game. It often seems to be one or the other.
So you don't think we need to cut Trent some slack?
I think as a general point, we need to cut Trent some slack because he probably could have still been blamed when he wasn't playing. People just have it out for Trent.
He's also been rubbing off on Bradley in training.
Yeah. The
lack the of maturity, with, yeah.
But because your face after you said it is the thing. It's
really I felt eyes on me. Yeah.
Delivered with a barb. Yeah.
I think also Bradley probably had kind of run his race a little bit in terms of the amount of games he'd had of late. He wouldn't have been expecting to play this amount of game time, I don't think. And I think he was starting to, as good as he looked when he first came in the team, a few holes here and there were starting to come into play. So it's good timing that Trent's come back in, I think. Probably similar situation with the goalkeeping situation.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it is 2-0 yesterday. Maybe it is greater. I don't know. There's the one Alisson saves, which is very similar to the Darwin one where it drops and it's just booted straight at him.
Yeah. You got, by all means, fair play for putting your hand out, but at the same time, it's, you know, hope and a prayer, isn't it?
Donkey gets chucked at essentially every big striker that is not very good. Mateta might be the definition. He is so bad. I don't understand.
But every now and again he does something, you go like, maybe he's not. No, actually he is that bad.
I remember when Edouard played his first game, he got 2 against Spurs. Someone got sent off stupidly. It's Tanganga, I think, got sent off for Spurs in that game.
Yeah.
I thought we'd been linked with him and it was like, why the hell did we not go and get him? If you're not starting above this man here, there is some serious, serious problems with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And they spent some decent money trying to find a striker.
Mm.
Just pray Eddie is the next guy they come and say, because they wanted him before they got half these guys. Ultimately, you think just one comeback too much?
Yeah, I think you can't keep going behind. It's fairly simple, and I think probably as much as Liverpool lose at home to Palace is always going to be a shocking result, I think probably the least shocked people would be a lot of Liverpool fans watching, because you've kind of seen some of these performances and kind of, you know, you can't dig these out each time.
Somewhat ironic that you get through the tough patch and at this point now when basically the squad's back fit.
Yeah.
This is where the drop points come in.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because some of them are looking like they've had a lot of games in a short period of time. And then the ones coming back, are they going to then take too long to get up to speed before now and the end? We might have just about cooked it wrong. But I don't know. Is it also there's mental fatigue potentially as well, where there's been this whole focus on, initially there was talk of 4 trophies. Again, it's kind of been talked like, we talked about 4 trophies. I don't recall doing that myself. Maybe
there's some players in your team that did.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? You're like,
I'm a very cowardly fan.
Yeah.
I think our team has been told, like, clearly there was a thing last year of, don't even acknowledge that we're top of the league. Don't even acknowledge it. Trent, after winning the League Cups, 1 out of 4.
Yeah, maybe
hungry for more.
Maybe could have helped out that. Yeah, maybe that's fair. But also, they do also then all underpin it with, like, really take one game at a time and all that usual shit that people say. So, yeah, I don't know. I think potentially some mental fatigue with, you know, it being this whole ascend off for Jurgen and stuff. I do think that puts on an extra layer of pressure that maybe players aren't used to.
Is there anything Klopp could have done differently yesterday?
I'm not so sure. I mean, I thought Gakpo actually looked okay when he came on.
I've got that down.
Which was odd, whether he could have looked at starting him. And then, you know, Darwin's probably at this point maybe be better off the bench in a game like this against Palace, where
patience is running very thin there, isn't it?
Tricky.
I did say last week, knives are out. They're even further out now.
Well, the thing is, if Salah isn't in good form as he isn't, you're then looking at Darwin and Luis Diaz and going, like, some of these misses you're making aren't acceptable anymore. It's kind of, it's just not.
The dangerous thing with him is he appears to be thinking, and that sounds ridiculous, but his whole thing is he's so much better when he's just leathering it, or he is like one touch. Because some of his work with Salah, it's like, surely you didn't mean to do that, because that's so far and above anything else we see from you, where it's just instinctual.
Yeah,
he seems to be, when he's getting to like the corner of the 6-yard box, it's, well, do I drill it across goal or do I pull it back? And some of the, I don't know, there's something there, whether it is just the pressure of where you are at this stage, but I don't know. How much do you think Thursday night played into it?
Yeah, I think it probably did, didn't it? Because, well, obviously we were in the darts, so it was kind of, you're a little bit numb to the fact that we've just been slapped up by Atlanta. But then I go back and watch the highlights, and even in that game where we were obviously hideous, we still had chances in that one even.
And Darwin is carrying maybe something into...
exactly that. And so I do think, as soon as you start missing a couple early on in these games, it kind of, that comes back straight into your mind. And the worry for us, obviously, is this has been a pattern with the missed chances now. And I think it's probably got into the players' heads, where once upon a time, we would have had that mindset of, don't worry, it's coming. Now, you get to even around an hour mark, and if you're losing or drawing still, panic starts setting in, because you know, shit, we might carry on missing these chances here. Whereas once upon a time, we'd almost will it into the goal.
I guess that's it as well. When you have Mane, Firmino and Salah up top, usually they're going to...
But even with the current bunch, we had it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, the confidence has slipped, hasn't it? Because we would, you know, that's why we've been able to come back from all these results.
Where do you stand on United fans taking credit for dismantling your season, is I believe how it's been put?
I've been in that spot where you have nothing and your only saving grace is that you can try and spoil someone else's fun. So
we're playing Chelsea next Tuesday.
Yeah. So I don't begrudge them that. I don't think it's true, but I don't begrudge them. That's exactly what I would do if I had nothing else. And I must stress, you have nothing else.
All right. So Arsenal entered this game knowing Liverpool had just dropped points, and they had the simple task of winning every game until the end of the season, and they'd lift the Premier League.
Easy as that.
Now, much like your second half, we had more than the best of the goalless first half against Emery's team. 14 shots, 1.23 expected goals. It felt like more than that. And I actually think this is about as well as you can play without taking the lead. I think the one clear-cut chance they have is the ball gets punted into Zinchenko's back, and Ollie Watkins does well to hit the post, and I don't really know how it doesn't go in, much like the Tielemans one later in the game.
Yeah.
Odegaard was playing at a level you're lucky to see a couple of times a season in that first half. He was going nuts.
I remember we had a conversation about players not taking it by the scruff of the neck anymore, and I was watching him, and I was thinking, that is the closest.
He does that. He's pretty good for that with... If anything else, and he can have a bad game and his work rate will put an impact on the game. Yesterday, it was just everything in the first half.
It was like some of his stuff was like a peak 10 performance in terms of that dropping into space, you know, and playing a pass in behind each time. You're just like, he is cutting them apart at some point. One of these guys is going to finish one of these chances.
The one he nipped between two players and two Villa players take each other out. I'm not sure I've been angrier this season than Zinchenko kicking that ball out of play. And you don't want to say the game turns in that moment. We have plenty of chances after that. But I thought that was a sign. And I said it about United when they played you last week. And I said, that told me they weren't as up for it as I thought they were. Yeah. When they kicked it out and gave Liverpool a chance to get back on it. Why on earth are you kicking it out? At half time, I was still enraged about it. Because it just makes no sense at all. And then when you're asking, where did this all go wrong? I mean, a couple of changes. Jesus replaced Havertz up top. Havertz replaces Jorginho in the middle. Trossard replaces Martinelli on the left. Zinchenko comes back into the side. And I think you have to start with Arteta as for where it all goes
wrong.
Did
you not like the team selection?
Well, it's hard to be too critical when you play at that level in the first half.
Yeah, I didn't think that was a bad
choice. It's... You had positive cameos from Zinchenko, Trossard and Jesus in that game. All three have done this before, and at least in Trossard's case, he's not been the same player when he started. He is a lot better coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I know you got Bayern Munich on Wednesday, which is now huge, as if it wasn't huge already, but I just didn't think you could think about that too much. I thought you had to put that to the side. Villa is one of the hardest games left. We said about on paper, that's a harder game. In reality, that's a harder game than Chelsea. That's a harder game than Spurs. A harder game than United.
Yeah, definitely.
And it looked like, I don't know, I said, we were speaking about it on Saturday, and I said, there's people that are clamouring for Partey to start, and I don't see that I've seen what I've seen from him, and that this is a game for him to come back into.
No, not against Villa, I don't think.
And it just felt like you just messed with the winning formula. Even if you were going to make changes, I thought, well, keep Jesus out wide, keep Havertz up top. If you want to do it, have Trossard in central midfield, if that's where you want to do it, if you have to kind of get all these guys in. Martinelli needs the minutes right now more than Trossard does.
I was surprised by the Martinelli one. That was the one that I kind of got putting Havertz back in the midfield for this one, only because we know Villa's physicality in there. Having said that, obviously they don't have Douglas Luiz, so that's part of that out of the window. But we know how they like to play, so I could kind of get it. But yeah, the Martinelli one, I didn't know if I was being ignorant and he has like another knock or something like that.
And whatever he did at halftime did not work. But that's
the opposite
now,
effect.
That's now one European tie and three league games against Emery for Arteta. He's won one league game in the last minute with Jorginho.
Yeah.
We put about
goal, I think you mean.
4xG at their place in November. Somehow didn't score like the first half here. I don't know how we haven't scored across those two halves. And then we get jobbed with that Havertz one in the back post that they rule as a handball. And they score very early against us. And then we're knocked out of the Europa League where Arteta goes galaxy-brained and he's got Xhaka at left-back and he's got Smith-Rowe as a false nine. And Luiz was suspended, as you say, but McGinn was the man I was most scared of here because he was good. I just knew he'd be everywhere. Watkins seemingly was pissed off by Troy Deeney and took it out on us. I don't know if you've seen, seen this. Like, and Zinchenko, I don't want to be too harsh here because I really
you were being
like,
harsh on Sunday. I know you were.
What I really like everything that's great about the player, but what used to be a worthwhile trade-off has now become a net negative in what he's offering on the pitch. Our best patch of form this season, both defensively and offensively, has been when he wasn't even an option to be had.
Yeah.
Whether it's him trying to prove something to himself or the manager, he just seems incapable of being a cog in the system. He has to be the system. Extra touches in dangerous positions. He tries dribbling past Tielemans in
that
the box
one
yesterday.
As much as Tielemans has scored that, it's a banger. What the hell are you doing?
He's taking up positions that I refuse to believe have been requested by the coaches. When the second goal goes in yesterday, he's in right central midfield. Smith Rowe is the last man back. And he's trying to lead the huddles again. There's just so much going on. You're not the main character here. He's a useful, like, joker I've seen him referred to that can be played by Arteta. So when we're chasing the game in midweek, I actually thought it might be the best game Arteta's coached in game with the changes he made with Trossard and Jesus and Zinchenko coming on. It changed it completely. But we weren't chasing the game here. He was in there. And it feels to me Arteta is sometimes the last guy to spot when he needs to be dragged. He was jeered off the pitch yesterday. It was that bad. But it's so strange to see a manager that is so intent on safety first. And this is the guy that you're willing to bet the house on. It makes no sense to me at all.
His thing of holding on to the ball for too long in recent games has been so odd. He's like...
Well, he's made a career of doing it, but the longer you go in, it's like... Trent has had to adapt the system he's playing because people had started to figure out what was going on there. And so it became a negative in, well, if he's not getting a goal or an assist, then he's being pinned back and he's just being targeted all game. Something needs to change with him here, even if it's just playing in midfield, doing some of these things. But I think these kind of thing is why he's not trusted in midfield because of the length of time he takes on the ball. And It's so strange. It's Kivior, we've seen... or at least I've seen, can play up to a level. So the games against City this season, I thought he struggled. The game against Bayern Munich, he struggled. Really, he's been pretty much okay other than that. I don't think he is going to be in any team of the year. I don't think he'd start for Liverpool. There's plenty of teams he wouldn't start for in the league, but he does what he's expected to do. He's big, he's strong, he's tall, and he's quick enough.
He'd have come out with the ball with that challenge with Tielemans. So the whole thing wouldn't have happened.
It's... And so he's in the team, but we have got this great run of form. Zinchenko gets back fit. He comes in for one game, and then it's, okay, well, he's back in the team now.
Mm.
And it just seems strange to me because you renew Tomiyasu's contract. Timber maybe was going to be the guy there all season. Maybe. We still don't know.
Mm.
But Tomiyasu, I assume you've given a new deal, which I was against at the time because of his fitness record. And he was a disgrace when he came on yesterday as well. But he comes in, and I assume that Salah game has done a lot for him.
Yes, yeah.
In that we play a big game here, I can play on either flank and you're just a lockdown guy. You hear the training stuff coming out and they say he's the guy you don't want to dribble at, basically. Kivior is the guy who's supposed to be playing 30 games for me this season, doing a job. The best thing about him is in his best games you don't notice him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just going on like the Newcastle game this season, he's just there. Zinchenko, you cannot help but notice him every single time he's on the pitch and something's going on. It's, I don't know. And then Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah.
My man.
That's...
I want to defend you. You know I do. But no league goals for 80 days. 80... I know there's been injuries, but Ivan Toney would like a word, yeah. Basically. And it's not even just a missing. He's making wrong decisions. He's offside more than he's onside. He's slow as hell.
His decision-making is baffling.
The problem with having eyebrows like that as well, it's if you're having a bad game.
Gingerbread man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's too expressive a face. Yeah, it's too expressive.
He just looks upset the time.
I think he has a part to play here. Like, he wouldn't be on the list of guys I'd sell in the summer. But the two guys brought in to take us to the next level have done just that. Just the issue is they now can't take us to the next level.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're capable of doing it. And that's becoming increasingly clear. They'll keep playing, I imagine. Arteta is fixated on experience. I don't know if that's something that's been dreaded by Pep or whoever. Outside of Jorginho and Partey, those two have the most of it. He said recently in an interview, Jesus, that he can't remember the last time he was able to play football without being in pain. And I feel sorry for him. He's one of the most aesthetically pleasing footballers I've ever seen play for Arsenal. And there is a long list of players that you see there. He has the ability to slow the game down to such a degree that he just skips by players and makes them look foolish. But the issue is, since his knee injury, he looks just less and less capable of executing what he can see. He can beat the man, and he doesn't have the burst to break free. He doesn't have like the dexterity to poke it around players. In another life, he's been doing finishing drills straight out of the womb, and he's probably Real Madrid's number 9. Because the ability he has is crazy, but... we aren't there. He isn't someone that can adapt his game, I don't think. He isn't going to have a run. Like, Harry Kane can be 45 and he can play his game. Jesus is not going to be doing that.
I'd probably advise him to stop doing his interviews. That's probably. I don't know if I'm a striker. I can't play without being in pain. Maybe reining the interviews big
I
guy.
I think part of that, if you think maybe someone's interested in selling you in the summer, you say, don't be buying me. I'm struggling.
You're probably right there. But I thought he had a really good impact in the week he came on.
And that's the issue.
Which kind of indicates maybe he needs to be a sub for you. Because he even, in that one, I thought he looked kind of electric into his movement and stuff, actually. And he looked quicker in that game.
Mr. Box was bad.
He looked genuinely quicker and like he could get about better. And then in this game, it was forgotten.
I think his best bet is settling for a bench role and seeing off,
and he
basically.
He isn't going to want that, is he?
You got to see off Reece Nelson, who we gave $100,000 a week to not be trusted. And any other winger that we may buy. But
I think he's going to say, I left City because I didn't want to be on the bench. I didn't come to Arsenal to be on the bench. I think you are probably right about where he now...
Yeah.
He got you to a place, but now, boys, you upgrade again, don't you? And him and Zinchenko probably don't meet the standard that you need.
And so the two mistakes I thought were Havertz back in midfield, despite him being one of our brightest, and Zinchenko at left back is... Zinchenko at this stage is acting as like a beacon of hope for terrible teams. When we played Fulham at home this season, our level of dominance wasn't that far away from the games against Palace and Burnley that we smashed months later. But him being on the pitch gives them something to run at. It gives them like a clear aim, and it's basically ensuring spirits don't drop too much. They say, well, he's still there, so we can have a good go.
This is it. We said it. It might have only been even last week that I felt teams weren't playing Arsenal hard in the way they often don't with City, because you're kind of draining them of hope. You look at, like, how do we score against this team? And now you go, well, that's how we score. It is like when that spell last season where I know I would laugh and joke about Trent, but his form was really bad.
Yeah.
And I think Carragher at the time said, look, you don't have to be elite defensively. You just can't be a liability. And that's kind of the stage right with Zinchenko, where I kind of watch this game and go like, it's not that I'm like criticizing, I know the type of player you are, but you can't be doing some of the stuff you're doing right now. And you weren't when you were playing well. You weren't hanging on to the ball that long. And sometimes you say it's part of it is to draw on the press or whatever. This isn't that. He's just loitering on the ball. He looks he's unsure of what to do.
He's playing like a man trying to avoid military service. Like, there's a reason to keep me. Please don't send me away.
I watched back his highlights of the two games against Spurs last year, and it's a different player. He's playing on such a wavelength in those games that he's so far above anyone else on the pitch in terms of dictating everything.
But I think the problem is as well with Zinchenko, if he's been out for this long, the team has evolved without him. And
they have, yeah.
And he's come back trying to play the way that he knows what I thought got him the plaudits or what he thought he can contribute to the team. And he's come back into a system that was working, and he's now the fly in the ointment, essentially, where he's trying to nail it back to the good old days, but it's just not quite the same levels.
The worst thing that's happened to him is Jorginho, because we no longer need him to build up from at the back.
Yeah.
Havertz yesterday made some really bright runs, and the hordes of Chelsea fans that felt the need to message me yesterday, the fans that care more when we lose than when their own side do, that cowardly bunch. But the messages about him were baffling to me. He must have still been trying to wind me up, because he was still doing this at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Aside from one in the first half where he takes a heavy touch, he isn't expected to do any better with the chances that he has. An elite striker, yes, but we spoke last week about the trade-off, and maybe there comes a time when that trade-off doesn't work anymore, like with Zinchenko. Yesterday in the second half especially, we could have done with a target or an outlet like him, someone to build from. But he just took so long to make any worthwhile changes. You drag Ødegaard, who told reporters post-game that he was fine, by the way, after 75 minutes. That was baffling.
I was shook by that one. Jesus.
You leave Jesus out there baffling. You swap Ben White rather than just tell him to be careful, because Gary Neville couldn't wrap his head around that. The guy's on a booking. He's not going to go and clatter John McGinn, who you can blow on him and he'll go down. It was like Old Trafford last season, where he changes everything but the issue to show that it wasn't an issue of his own making in the first place. Villa were very good in the second half. I've not even mentioned that yet. Yeah. But it just so much of this was our own undoing.
So, didn't want to interrupt your monologue. I understand you backing your boy.
My head's hot.
We've always said that he will make good runs, but he's never missed a dependable. And when you're in a title run and you need someone that's going to put the ball in the net, you don't need someone who does the same miss every time he gets a one-on-one.
It wasn't.
I've seen that miss 100 times in a blue and red shirt.
So he's on the left-hand side of the box?
Yeah, when he's running in at goal, bearing down on the keeper, and then he just all of a sudden can't sort his feet out.
He cut his back ball three times yesterday and no one got in the area for him.
Yeah, but he's the guy in the team supposedly being on the cutbacks.
Well, that's why I said, so he wasn't playing there yesterday. No, he was playing in midfield, and he's like an 8.5. So my issue was...
I understand that.
Yeah.
So he's pulling it back really nicely, but there's two opportunities, pretty gilt-edged, when you're in a title run-in, to put the ball in the net. And are you telling me that that's the best he can do?
I'm saying that, much like I said with Zinchenko, there's a level with him where I know he's not going to score me 30 goals a season. This is my thing with... not just you, there's far worse Chelsea fans than you. But it's a thing that if Arsenal don't lose, it has to have been Kai Havertz's fault.
That was a compliment, thanks, mate.
Well, lovely thing to say. Yeah.
If Arsenal lose, it has to have been Kai Havertz, basically, as the sole reason we lost this game.
I'm not saying that. I'm just highlighting the fact that this is exactly why we were annoyed. Because we know that he can do good things and he creates great runs. But when it comes to...
They didn't flog you, Jesus, or whatever, did they? Yeah. So it's going to be Kai Havertz.
When it comes to business ends... and you get opportunities like that in the title run-in, got to take him.
There wasn't one yesterday I looked at and thought that was a big chance. I think when you're looking at it with hindsight, you can look at it and say, we could have done better there. The one where he's played through on the left, he could have done better with. That was a lack of decisiveness, which I said 6 months ago is the worst thing about him, that he never feel like he's just putting his foot through it, which I know he can do. He scored one against England like it. But yesterday I thought after Ødegaard, I thought he was probably our best player in doing a midfield shift and tracking back and getting in there with the runs he was making. I thought he wasn't supported by the players around him enough.
I can agree with that. I can also say, though, that to be in that role, you need to offer more than just making good runs. You can't...
Yesterday was different. Yesterday he was in midfield.
I know, but you can't win trophies with good runs and nothing else, no end product. I think you look at him...
He's having his most productive Premier League season.
Which is the exact replica of his last season at Chelsea, in a better team and a more attacking team. I'm just saying, you should expect more from someone who's one-on-one with the keeper, no matter how tight the angle, you should, in a title running. I've seen
I think it's disingenuous to make yesterday about him.
I'm not making it about him.
No.
I'm not. I'm just saying that you should expect more. This is what annoys us. I think, I've seen titles won under Mourinho where you get one chance a game and you have to take it. So maybe it's a little bit different for me. But you need to have Mr. Dependable in that, and you need to at least...
I'm seeing a title loss with 10 chances being missed.
at some stage, though, we've obviously not bought him for that.
No.
But it's not to score.
But if you're in
no, but that's the yeah, no, what is it? It's like 12 goals in 7 games before this. So yesterday wasn't a kind. The goal goes in with Bailey, where there's a whole thing of errors, and I want you to look at Zinchenko's positioning on that because he's about 6 yards behind the rest of the play, and he's doing it the whole half where he's just terrified of Bailey behind him.
I thought with that one, and I didn't think he had his best game. I thought Rice probably could have read it a little bit better as well, just because, again, you can ask where Zinchenko was, but he realized that, kind of like our midfield do, like kind of a second after, oh, this guy's made the run, and by that point, it's already too late. The ball probably should never get across to him either, but nonetheless, Rice would normally, I think, read it better than that.
I think the management of him, I thought he was played wrong in the Bayern Munich game. I thought play him as a six in that game, because you played Jorginho as an eight against Liverpool and it worked really, really well. Mm. But yeah, I think you're asking him to do a bit too much, and he's a very good player, so he'll do a lot of it. But yesterday, where you're in that game, Villa's run like they do, and you're asking him to be a six behind 2 8.5s, not even behind like 2 8s, and they're so far forward, and he just looked fucked by the end of the game because the Bayern Munich one was taxing as well. He was putting a shift in that game.
Would you have taken getting knocked out by Porto to be fresher for the title race?
No, because last season I thought that was going to be a thing, and I had two players go down, obviously. But I was saying it with the Europa last season because we had the Europa and that had been a thing. It was like, even if we'd won the Europa and lost the league in the way that we did, it still would have hurt because of getting basically a bit overexcited because when is this going to happen again? We got here this season, and I think at some point you can't keep putting it off. It's like Villa fans saying they'd rather top four than the Conference League. It's like some stage you're there now. I didn't wait all this time to get back in the Champions League to bomb it off because that's what it is. And now there's maybe a conversation to be had if we can get past Bayern Munich, then you look and say, well, I think I'm pretty sure I know what City are going to do. We may have them. Then do we decide, does Declan Rice play twice a week? Does Saka play twice a week? Several players in this team, and all squads are like it, they're pumped full of God knows what to just get them through 90 minutes. Saka must be full of whatever painkiller you can think of. Mm. And then he doesn't score, and it's a big laugh and a joke online. Villa, I thought, Ollie Watkins was fantastic. The Villa defence held firm. I still don't rate a couple of them, but maybe I'm just a hater. I find it hard to call it a masterclass for Unai when we picked it apart with ease in the first half, but fair play for having a resilient team that doesn't cave in and comes out in the second half. He claims he didn't change anything. I'm not so sure about that. That man has caused me more misery in my lifetime than both Fergie and Jose. I saw people,
in a shorter period of time.
I saw people asking for him to be cheered pre-game for his efforts as manager.
Amen.
He should have been booed at the building for crimes against football. And I've toned that down. He fielded that pub side against City, which I'm still resentful about. And then he sends them out yesterday, like he's told them in the dressing room, we've got snipers outside your mum's house. You know what to do. The way some of them were running, and they've got a big European game Thursday, someone should have told them that. It was...
Look, I was thinking this, watching Palace against... I was remembering how they rolled over for you boys. I was thinking, what are you trying here? Give us a fucking 5-0, 6-0, whatever it was for you. You've... Two bags of four? What do you think you're doing?
remember, they had a different keeper in that day.
They haven't got European football,
I've seen Ange talking about the fixture build-up. They've played two games more. They've played 40 games this season. There needs to be a word about that team. Maybe you pissed off Ollie Watkins that much that... he took it out.
My words seem to carry a lot of weight. Obviously, he's been motivating a lot of people.
Did you see the thing he took offence to?
Yeah.
Deeney said he's a winger playing up front. You've been called worse than that.
Yeah. If he has listened to this, then dear Lord, he's going to take it very personally.
Because typically, I'd be all on board with dunking on Deeney. But the second I saw that story, I thought, what has that prick done? Because he's not even an Arsenal fan. Do it before you play Watford in pre-season or something. Talk about him. And I saw that idiot talking about, you know, if he'd gone to Leicester, he'd have been in England's number nine, by the way. So maybe just don't listen
Troy
to Deeney, a
famously
word.
Famously known for his wits and brains.
His measured takes.
I mean, Emery is not like playing Tielemans earlier in the season. He had that man playing a double pivot yesterday. I thought, what is going on?
That deserves a lot of credit. If you want to talk about Emery masterclass, I'll give
it. Does I said he must have threatened that man's life. I saw him running yesterday.
Yeah.
That is the belief Zinchenko gives you.
He sprinted at one point.
From having watched what I've watched all season at my club, to see a relegation threatened Villa be taken over and not really had many new additions. What, Bailey was still there, I think, wasn't he? So was Costa.
Yeah, they brought in Diaby.
Might give a...
Yeah.
We might have to credit Stevie for what he was doing there, maybe. We've got to look at that.
I think you have to praise him so much.
Yeah, obviously.
I think if it...
This club is his level.
He's going to get them into the Champions League.
Yeah, and let me tell you...
Your club into that. That's what he couldn't do.
I can tell you already where they'll finish in the... Oh, but they don't even have that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And what's going to happen with the Europa? Is Europa Heritage dead?
Yeah.
Of course.
Nobody is more distraught by the new Champions League format than
there's
Unai.
There's got to be like a certain place.
There'll be something, won't there?
Be relegation, won't it?
Everyone's saying about, you know, it's unfair that the Champions League teams end up going into the Europa. Take those teams out of the fucking Europa then, and we'll see what's left. It's not always going to be that pretty.
So, I mean, this is where we are now. We've lost one game in 12, and because of the standards, it's a head loss situation. Same for Liverpool fans.
Like yours is literally like a half of football as well. Like ours, we've had a few sort of ropey performances we've got through.
Well,
although we still had a chance in every single one of those games. But you can say there's a trend that maybe we're not putting teams away when we should. This has literally been 45 minutes of bad football already from Arsenal. We're like, fuck, they're done. They're obviously done.
we took 4 points from Liverpool and City, but we took 0 from Villa and 1 from Fulham. So there you go.
Okay. Yeah.
The reality is that no team has ever won a title race against Pep City. That's what we need to get our heads around. You have to be literally perfect, you were in 1920.
Could we class in Conte's Chelsea?
Was that a title? How far ahead did you win it by?
I don't know. I think they finished third.
I was about to say, I thought City came fourth.
Team has ever gone neck and neck
we
with
just
them
beat
and won.
Them. Oh, right. So, I mean,
we won on their watch, but we didn't go neck and neck. They come like 20
and
points
they've not
behind,
been at their best, and yet here they are. We are now the Bundesliga. When City win it this year...
It's the Farmers League.
When City win it this year, out of all Europe's top five leagues, this will be the longest consecutive winning streak. We are what... Wow. We are what we claim to hate. Oh, and we hate it. So it's not too far different. But
I've got to tell you, the reaction to Sunday tells me quite a lot of people love it. quite a lot of people are quite happy that the...
It is Turkey's vote.
They're out of it.
I mean, a part of me was watching both games... willing.
No, you weren't.
It was a very, very small part.
Yeah, I was going to say, percentage-wise.
I'm talking 5%. Yeah. And the other 95% looked at that 5% and thought, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Just for the all rounds for the league, for how exciting it should be. But then it just dawned on me that how many Liverpool fans I know, how many Arsenal fans I know, and how much easier my life would be if City just... walk it again.
I don't want to talk about the joint intellect of Chelsea fans. I had multiple messages saying waka waka, Kai Havertz is rubbish again.
Mine was actually smart, I thought. Tottenham hopes down the drain, Kai Havertz chokes again.
It is a nice chant.
I think that is better.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It lifted my otherwise depressed spirits of a tough day.
If you want to know how victimised I was feeling, I was close to asking why it was called a burnt out Liverpool and Arsenal bottling it, but I thought they've got a bit more credit in the bank because they have won a trophy. So with Arsenal, I disagree with most of the narratives that I've seen spun in the last 24 hours. Unfortunately, I would say to those players, until you give people a reason not to say it, then there's kind of free rein to say it. And they aren't the ones that have to go and fight it away.
They don't hear this shit.
Does it feel over for you? It's mental that we're 2 points behind the leader, but does it feel as like...
Well, I said to you, and admittedly, I also said this about Arsenal, so that's unfortunate, but I said I don't think they will drop points in any game other than the Spurs games. The only one I have any question mark over, and we just watched Spurs get dicked 4-0 by Newcastle, so...
They've got us next.
Yeah, I think City will win all of their games ultimately, yes, I guess
with,
it is.
With two games left, and you're top of the table, are they putting in a performance against City?
They're bending over.
Unless they need Champions League, but...
Yeah, knock yourselves out, lads.
They were nasty last season, City, in that they won the league because it all went downhill for us, and then they said, we'll chuck a few in.
Yeah.
And so when the season ends and people look back in history, they'll say, well, if you'd beat City one of those times, you'd have won the league.
Yeah.
All right, we've got a couple of other games just to touch on. If there was any joy to be had from the weekend, we did have a couple of other TV games. So Newcastle 4, Spurs 0. Perhaps the most worrying thing for Spurs was how similar this was to their 3-0 defeat at Fulham less than a month ago. Didn't look up for the fight, couldn't hold the ball going forward. Son gave it away for two goals, which I'd have enjoyed more if he wasn't in my FPL side. Lost almost every second ball. Every counter-attack looked like it was dangerous. And as soon as Newcastle kind of went through the gears, they just couldn't live with them at all. They can't blame injuries, like they've done a lot of the time. They had almost a full squad to choose from. Newcastle had Jacob Murphy and Elliot Anderson at wing-back. Can't blame fatigue because of the games they've played this year. But let's talk about Mickey van der Ven.
It's just so good.
I've always said player slip alone is hilarious. Hilarious.
But when you see someone skidding on their head...
The stills of that are so unfortunate.
If there's a better picture this season, but some of the tweets, I'm glad we were after that because I wouldn't have been able to enjoy this properly. When I see that. I'll always break it. The first time was so nice, I had to do it twice. The AJ clip.
Yep.
I saw the clip of him on his head and the caption, he doesn't have one song where he's got to be doing all this. It's just so, so good. And before the game, they were going all in about this Spurs defence. This Spurs defence, they tell us, is one of the best in the league. On paper, is one of the worst in the league. Now, they are better with Van der Ven in there. Rio was giving him the Rolls-Royce testament, and at halftime says, you know, sometimes Rolls-Royces need an MOT. Get out of here with that.
It's not a bad line from Rio, considering his normal material.
They shouldn't have let him come back from when he was wearing that hat indoors for the lunchtime kickoff. I think it was one of the Arsenal games. He's had that hair, he'd had his hair done. It was, get that hat off indoors now.
Does anyone think, or has ever thought, that Rio is cool? Because he carries himself like someone who does think he is, but I don't think anyone's ever thought of him like
that.
You
thought he was for a moment.
Me?
You gave him credit when he was walking past the Arse fans before the first game of the season when he was getting some stick.
Oh yeah, because they were saying some horrible things to that man, and he seemed to enjoy it. So I kind of, yeah, I enjoyed that, but I didn't disagree with everything they were saying. they might have been right.
The Champions League,
about his personal life.
Champions League coverage in the week was funny. When
him being the face of that coverage is mad.
When he
that is the most tone deaf. Like, we do not know our audience,
and it's like when he all of a sudden realised that Bayern Munich should have had a penalty. And he just... It's just like a funny... Like, no.
It was like he'd felt so ill about suggesting Arsenal needed a penalty. He needed something to get out of his system, and this was it.
Do you think they should give a penalty for that?
Yeah, 100%.
In, like, the grand scheme of things?
100%.
I got the point Carragher was making, but this was done by Gabriel. Yeah. What was he thinking?
They blew the whistle,
yeah,
and he picked up the ball.
What do you think the reaction would have been if we'd got a penalty for that?
I mean, if someone had blown the whistle and you picked the ball up, there is a case to be made that...
Case to be made, yeah. If you say it's a penalty guaranteed. If it wasn't given...
Yeah, people hate you, yes, we get it.
If it wasn't given and I came in here on Monday, I came in here today saying, and we were robbed of a penalty, you'd be laughing in my face.
I don't think...
And I say that thinking it's a penalty.
He picked the ball up. I don't think there's any argument with that. Have I given you any...
Does it not happen all the time that the ref blows the whistle and someone chucks it to someone else to take, or they move the ball forward, yeah, they pick it up to move it?
He kicks a still ball after a whistle is blown, so that ball is in play. How many times when the whistle goes, do you see an outfield player pick it up in his
own The issue
area?
They've got is the ref has his back to it, and they don't want to VAR that.
And what I also did...
VAR to the night off, they said, we're not checking anything.
They had it in the Bundesliga where the ball was... picked up by the player that was behind the line. He was a sub, or the player kicked it before it had gone fully out of play, and they get a penalty for it.
Yeah.
And they basically said, for things like that, we're not getting involved. That wasn't what VAR was for. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah, his line, if accurate, about it's like a kid's mistake or whatever, that would bore your piss if you were told that.
The fact that he knows about it. God.
Fucked it.
Wouldn't be unlike Tuchel to be lying, though, so let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Isaac.
Meow.
Yeah.
Oh.
This was Van der Ven's toughest game for Spurs by a long stretch. Mm. He left on the floor by Isaac for one, Gordon for the other, and then Isaac races away from him for the third, which if you hadn't listened to earlier in the broadcast, he's basically Usain Bolt, so I don't know how this happened. I don't know how fast Isaac must be. Isaac was just too athletic, too sharp. Van der Ven just technically was doing everything wrong as well. It wasn't just, you know, it was a slippy pitch or whatever, which we heard a lot about in the United game. Bissouma is a six. Does that man not hear the first part of the midfield, the defensive midfield part there? Because he's nowhere to be seen. But that's now 21 goals this season for Isaac, 17 in the league. Making him the first Newcastle player since Shearer, who got 28, to be fair, that year, to reach the 20-goal mark across all competitions. Only one of the Newcastle players has done that. Do you know who?
So are you saying that's pre-Shearer, then, this person?
Post-Shearer.
Okay, so he's not the first person since Shearer to do
There's
that.
There's an asterisk.
Okay.
Tell all the boys you know.
Oh, he's in the Championship. Oh, fuck off.
Dwight Gayle's 23 in 16-17.
Get out of here. You had to bring that man up.
It's a weekend where he's been brought up a lot.
Yeah.
It was brave from Eddie Howe, obviously. Looked at the game that Spurs played against them earlier in the season.
It was braver from Ange to go, you know what we're going to do? Romero and Van der Ven, you're on your own. Try and deal with Isaac.
They tried to do pretty similar, I think. It's just that they played the wing back so high last time and they had a game of chicken where Howe said, well, we're going to match you. And it just so happens that they had a winger and a midfielder. So when the game did get narrowed down, they were more technical. Like, they were switching between a four and a five.
When you're looking at seeing like Isaac, Harvey Barnes, Anthony Gordon, you've got to know, look, maybe we've got to sort of switch it up a little bit here. Like, a little bit like Villa in the first game of the season. Maybe learn your lesson, especially when, I don't know, the second and third have gone in. Maybe switch on.
I think I've obviously seen Chelsea play Newcastle quite recently. And I've seen Newcastle not be in the game all game, and the ball dropped to Isaac's feet and he just buries it bottom corner. He is lethal. Why he'd play a game plan that plays into just giving him as much time and space to run at players as he can?
He only touched it three times before the goal, for his first goal.
But that's...
He's lethal out of anything.
Yeah, the thing is, this is a little bit more of the Newcastle last year where... Yeah. They could be tough to beat, and they didn't mind going direct. They said, look, you're going to come at us like that. We'll ping a ball in behind. We know we've got this pace to run onto it. It just kind of all worked perfectly for them. I thought Spurs played into their hands for a large part of it.
Ability-wise, and so say you go into the market this year, you really want Isaac, but Newcastle say he's not for sale. How far behind should Ollie Watkins be on that same list? Should they be on the same list?
I'd try him. Why not?
Because Ollie Watkins looks pretty damn good. 18 goals now in the league.
So who are you saying for?
I'm saying if
I can't get Isaac,
if you can't get Isaac,
I'll go Ollie Watkins.
Should Ollie Watkins be on that same list? If you're Arsenal and you say we need a nine this year, we want Isaac, and Newcastle say there's no amount of money you can give us.
I think Ollie Watkins at Arsenal makes so much sense.
I don't.
When you say
but Isaac. I don't know how many other strikers there are like him. He is pretty much the unicorn in the league.
If there wasn't an injury record like he's had since at Newcastle, which would be a bit of a concern, then someone probably would try and test their FFP situation and go all in on him.
If I make it easier, how much of a gap do you think there is in ability between Watkins and Isaac?
A solid gap, because he can't finish like Isaac can. And that's pretty useful for a striker.
I think
you getting Ollie Watkins in would be swapping Gabriel Jesus' problems for Ollie Watkins' problems.
You could probably make a case that Isaac's a better finisher than Haaland. Haaland just gets more chances.
I think we need to stop disrespecting Haaland to that degree.
I've seen Haaland miss a lot against Chelsea, but I've seen him miss some unexplainable misses.
Well, I found out after the fact, after I'd played my triple captain, that the two teams Haaland finds it hardest to finish against are Bournemouth and Chelsea. So you just seem to have lucked out there.
That's a decent thing to have.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But he's been... We've gone a bit far with the way we're talking down on Haaland, I think.
Keane set the tone, didn't he?
He's done.
You're talking about Isaac as the unicorn in the league. I'm just saying that... I'm not saying he's a better striker. I'm just saying as a finisher,
I think
if the ball drops at his feet, I'm probably backing Isaac, as much as I am Haaland.
If Isaac was the all-round player he is and he finished better than Haaland, then he wouldn't be at Newcastle.
I don't think he will be for that much longer.
No, but he would be already. We'd be talking... If you can finish better than Haaland and you can hold it up and you can fast...
I'm not saying that. I'm saying ball drops to someone.
No. In the last 30 seconds, you said he might be a better finisher than Haaland.
Yeah. I think this season... Haaland last season was incredible. I've seen Haaland miss some absolute stinkers this season.
I guess the out would go, if you keep having those chances, you will have some misses on the record.
100%.
That's what I'm telling myself with Darwin. That's what I'm rolling with.
I'm just saying, I've seen Haaland, he's been brought up this season a couple of times. I don't go as far to say some of the things he brought up. I'm just saying that he's had few touches in games, hasn't really been involved. And then when he isn't as involved, he then has a miss in his locker. I'm not saying Isaac hasn't missed. I'm just saying that when the ball drops him, I've seen it in the flesh, he's lethal from anywhere. Outside the box, inside the box.
He is.
He's definitely got more variety to his finishing, for sure, I think.
Haaland, I know what goals he scores.
Yeah.
And he's in a team perfectly engineered to create those chances for him. Either jumping all over someone at the back post and heading it from 2 yards out, or tapping it
cut
in.
Back.
Yeah, or a cutback tapping. So, I've seen Isaac this season score better goals than Haaland has this season.
I think if you tell me this summer, I can go and take any player
in the league.
I'm
taking Haaland, of course. But... I'm talking.
See, if it's us, I'm not sure that Isaac is probably better in our team than Haaland is, but it's probably.
He's coming around to the idea.
It's probably Rodri or Isaac if I'm taking a player in the league to go in play in my team.
You think the dressing room is big enough for Mr. Basmati and Rodri?
I think you get Jorginho and Rice on steroids, because we know the history of that team.
Whoa. Alleged.
It's not alleged with Pep, is it? He served, what, three bans? And then brought the same guy.
Got a lot of bad apples.
Just so happens that the inhalers are also sold in another part of England.
They broke in a minute.
They've all recovered. They can't use them anymore.
All right, to close out the football, we had Bournemouth United as well. Do you think this is just Spurs? Do we just kind of let these slide? We don't quite let them slide like we do with Chelsea, but do we just let, and just like, well, it's going to happen, and that's what we're supposed to say. Fair enough then.
Yeah. Spurs fans had such a stylistic nightmare under Conte that I think they'll accept the shortcomings of this from Ange. I think this is all on whether you, I think really your opinion on Ange is really going to have to depend on, do you think this is the initial phase and he's going to keep improving them and keep sort of working on this, or do you think this is what Spurs will be under him, i.e. some really good stuff and every occasionally get smashed. It's whether you think they're at the start of the journey or whether this will just be what he does with them.
Whose bald head am I spying there? Is that who I think it is?
I think it might be
Sir Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be him, it's going to be Simon Hooper, so good luck with either of them. As I just a moment. I don't like seeking out credit for my takes, but I did say Brennan Johnson comes in to replace Kulishevsky. Seems to have happened, so me and Ange somewhat on the same wavelength, it seems.
Boys.
Not, we both play Football Manager. I'm a bit more successful.
You make more eye contact.
Just about. And I can look at two of you at the same time and make eye contact. Bournemouth against United. So United's underwhelming spell of form continued at Bournemouth on Saturday evening as they drew 2-2 with Iraola's side. They had a full-on Football Manager storm at the press conference where I've just said, you know, no more questions, and it says I've stormed out. And Ten Hag was like, yeah, no thank you, as he's asked. You know, you could be on track to finish in United's worst ever place in the table in seventh. And he just stood up, and you hear a voice in the background go, I tried. I don't know who that was. Did either of you see that Garnacho after the game was liking Mark Goldbridge tweets? Supposedly, he has been disciplined internally, and the matter is over with.
Another internal disciplinary.
Yeah.
Should be disciplined, if anything, just for liking a Goldbridge tweet, let alone that it's about Ten Hag.
Why do players... I don't understand. What do they think is going to happen? Yeah. Do they think no one's going to clock this? Even with a... If it's a small account, but doing it with Goldbridge as well, you are saying... you're asking for a disciplinary with the manager.
There's the fact...
May as well just take it to him. Just go and have it out with
maybe
him.
Maybe they hate him so much now that they'll take it.
Well, they've kind of said a couple of times...
He should refuse to apologise. That's gone well.
He has sources... His channel at least has sources in the dressing room where...
Goldbridge?
Yeah. And it's pretty well publicised that Anthony is one of them.
He's one of the sources.
But they had an exclusive interview with him defending his charges. And so since then, it's just assumed that every leak coming out of the club is from him.
Oh, guilt.
Supposedly, he was dropped at the weekend because he was complaining he wasn't getting enough game time.
What
That's
a regime.
Very much cutting off the last possible guy that is willing to fight your corner.
Yeah, he's lost his last ally.
Because if we do the Jose thing with him... Look where they play after they leave here. Look whether they play. Anthony is going to have some serious reflecting to do when he sees the clubs coming in for him. Like when I request a trade on Madden and I see the teams that are coming in
for him. I think I'll stay, actually.
Another game where United conceded a lot of shots. 12 in the first half, 5 on target. Bournemouth were just feasting on the space that gets left open by that midfield. Really nice goal from Solanke. Unfortunate for him that Tony seems to be... He's just been dropped by Brentford, it seems, the last couple of games, so maybe not, but Watkins is cooking. We think England are pretty set on Tony at this stage with what he can offer. Solanke, you've got to be feeling a bit hard done by.
Yeah, is it 17 Premier League goals? That's pretty good going.
I've asked you, I think, off the podcast, so I can ask Jack. If I... give you all the teams in the league, and if you take kind of status into it as well, so Chelsea's place in the table is probably different. Signing, if I say, can he be a Chelsea striker compared to can he be a Wolves striker, then you understand what I'm saying. Where do you think is like the pinnacle of where Solanke can be playing regular Premier League football?
I think it's hard because I think he is in a system that's built around him. I don't think he gets that anywhere else, so he has to, you have to fend for yourself at big clubs and you fit into their system. I think they've realised that they're getting goals out of him, so they angle their play perfectly to accentuate his goal getting at the moment. So I think you're going to have to go and move into a team that would do that.
Can he play for Spurs?
I mean, he's no different to Brennan Johnson, I don't think, if you're playing him in that up front role.
Richie?
Yeah.
He'd get more goals than them.
Yeah, I think
is what. Particularly if he's that great.
If you're looking for goals, who are you bringing on? Werner or Solanke?
Are you not just.
The stinky one has had a few stinky misses that don't seem to have been picked up. People got bored of.
Yeah.
Are you not just a bit scarred? If I'm taking things out on Emery still, are you still taking them out on Solanke, or does the money you got for him.
And he seems like a nice fella as well. I just don't think he's that.
You think the club's going to go big for him, and then we're going to say it's going to. It might be Chelsea then, if this is the direction you think we're going.
We haven't got a rich history of buying our own players back for extortionate amounts of money, do we?
Well, we're Matic.
Yeah, the only season. One that's
if you offered Bournemouth saying, do you want to take Nicholas Jackson or we'll take Solanke, what do you think? What do you think Bournemouth say?
Oh my God.
They'll laugh you out the room.
Watch this. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's because Beto's in my FPL team. So there we go.
That was your mistake.
FPL draft, not my FPL team. I'm not that disgraceful.
Yeah, my thing with Solanke is that I think he's had a really good season, but people are probably now going to forecast what he can go on to do. I think this may be potentially his level, maybe a little bit better than this. Probably a slightly maybe a slightly more prestigious club than Bournemouth he could get to, but I do think, yeah, if someone went big for him, I'd worry about the return he's going to get for that. Still think his all-round game isn't quite what you would want. You'd look at him and you'd go, I'd probably want you holding the ball up a little bit better. He's got a lot better at these things, but probably his all-round game, I would say I'd have to see a bit more of him to think he's
if Villa sold Watkins in the summer, would Solanke be a worthy replacement or not good enough?
That would be where I would go. I think that's his ceiling for, if he can get a little bit better, keep improving, a club like Villa, I think, is as high as he's getting. Now, we say this, a club like Villa could mean Champions League football, but that sort of club.
All right, last couple of bits on this game. Penalty decisions here. The penalty that United get on Smith is egregious. It is absolutely mental. It's another weekend where the same old culprits are getting the same decisions, because the one James Maddison gets away with in that Spurs game, by the way, if it wasn't the North London derby next, he's getting a red card. And I think that with violent conduct for the body shot on Yates as well.
Yeah, I was amazed at that one.
That's two. We get like a 10-game ban.
The thing with this one, I think even if you go, all right, I'll give him a yellow for the studs up in the back on this one. There's one in the first half where he's just body checked Anthony Gordon, like the most cynical foul. And because it wasn't like, I don't know, like a slide tackle or something, the ref's just gone, no, you carry on. It's like, Gordon was in behind and he's just gone, nah, fuck off.
I thought I was just being like Arsenal Spursy. He's a massive prick.
What, Maddison?
Yeah. I did not know.
Come on.
And if you search his name on Twitter, Leicester fans will tell you this is the time of year these antics are going to come out, because he's not cooking this time of year.
Well, look, he's definitely got some quit in him. But look, great guy. Does seem a bit angry at the minute, though. Not really sure why.
Yeah.
Needs to rein that in. Maybe forget about the mullet. Forget about some of the anger.
Not sure if it's funnier for him to not go to the Euros or to go and not get on the pitch. And I'm trying to make some peace with whichever one happens. Ruling out the penalty late for Bournemouth. Now, the ruling here is because the foul does start outside of the lines, which they obviously have conclusive evidence to say.
Cold. Palmer does it again. Freezing.
Jack starting a car.
Story of our season. Car crash at the back and then Cole Palmer just comes up with something.
Yeah. Now, I do have Pickford in goal because Liverpool have screwed me. So, not ideal there. So, the foul starts outside of the box and the foul may continue into the box, but because he's not holding him, that's what the rule is. If it's a holding foul that continues into the box, then it can still be a penalty. But if it's a foul that starts outside and continues into the box, that's not a penalty.
They could fully have made that up on the spot and I'd just gone, yeah, you got to go with it.
Oh, I could have done without that Jackson assist.
It does feel like kind of the spirit of that rule kind of should be, if it does carry into the box, then your punishment is a penalty. But there you go.
There we go.
Bournemouth had chances again, once again. Another team against United who had a lorry load of chances and couldn't finish them. But Clivert should have had another couple in there. So,
anything really to add on United at this stage before we move on? Because it's kind of the same old thing each week.
Yeah, he is like slowly killing himself in front of us as well. Like everything he comes out with, Ten Hag, like, the ownership must be looking at it going, like, this guy's insane. guy is properly mental.
I'd be more surprised now if he was staying.
If he ends up keeping his job, that means they are like accepting a lot of bullshit, because they must know.
Sorry if I wasn't very attentive then. I've given the tickets for tonight's game to my father-in-law because I can't go. I've written off this month. and he's just sending me video after video after video from my own seats. So like, I've never seen this before. It's like, okay, we get it.
Some salt in the wound.
All right, well, we'll let you bounce if you want to get to the game.
Yeah, farewell.
You can watch the end of the first half here if you want. It's like, yeah, I'll just mute your mic. It's up to you.
No, I've got to get dinner on.
Adios.
Good, mate.
All right. UFC 300. Now, to my surprise, they really were starting with Figueiredo Garbrandt, because my understanding was it was just going to be the first prelim, so it would have been in the Lopez Yusuf space. Yeah, not the fun start to the night I was hoping for. Fun enough, but I thought we were going to get like the end of Gaethje and Holloway.
Yeah, I thought these two were going to come out swinging and someone was getting cleaned out, because
Garbrandt gave it a go.
Yeah, he's always going to threaten to do that, isn't he? But it's tricky because he kind of had learned, like, you can see that he's obviously getting in there. He's being more of a thinking fighter. He's kind of showing his skills a little bit more, but I don't know. Figueiredo's just also a very difficult guy to be doing that with. That's now a bad miss from Palmer. Jack's left.
Chili P. Then we have Bobby Green battering Jim Miller.
Yeah, that was competitive for a round, and oh my God, this man needs help.
Miguel Andrade got the job done against Marina Rodriguez. Moicano survives being knocked down, Jalen Turner refusing to follow him to the ground, and so letting him off, he wanted the walk-off. Diego Lopez smoked Sadiq Yusuf in a minute and 29 seconds.
He's going to be a lot of fun, isn't he?
Kayla Harrison did what she does, I guess. Holly Holm, for some reason, decided to clinch up with her. Says the game plan went out the window and she doesn't know why. Aljo, the only guy that doesn't get an interview all night after beating Calvin Kattar in the kind of fight which I saw people say Dana might make you pay him $300K.
Especially with his Aljo. He hates him.
Yeah.
Poor guy. I mean, look, like I said, I don't like it necessarily, but it is impressive to be able to go out and dominate someone like that in the first fight in our weight class. Kattar was maybe not what he once was, is still as a gatekeeper for a division is pretty decent.
We had Samurai Jiri against Rakic in the first proper banger back and forth of the night. That was a lot of fun. Jiri comes from behind to beat Rakic.
Well, let's face it, I didn't think Jiri was actually very good. Rakic was very good. And then the fact that Jiri's still able to pull that out of the fire is really where the impressive part comes in.
Jamal Hill's called him out today.
Is he?
Yeah,
why not? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's good fun.
Bo Nickel, okay, against Cody Brundage. I'll wait to see how good this guy is rather than be continually told how good this guy is.
Yeah, I wasn't sold by that performance.
I'm sure you are a good wrestler. We're not in a wrestling match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. It feels like you're obviously not going to get odds like you got on this one. He is one that you probably will back against a few times because you just go, I think this guy could get cleaned out. They should do him and Chimaev, though, if you're going to have your whole thing. And fuck it.
And see, let him bounce back if it doesn't go well. But Dana, sometimes, once you lose, he's like, on to the next.
Odd guy.
Saruki and Oliveira was fun. Different kind of fight for the night. We had a couple of times we thought Charles had pulled out the fire late.
Everton again, Everton.
Jackson is killing me.
It was, again, probably wanted just a touch more fun in that one. I thought it might be a little bit, but also because Oliveira is what he is, like you said, you do think he can kind of put a submission or something out of the fire at any given point.
It nearly did.
I thought with the two of them, we know they both can hit. I thought they both might sort of wobble each other a bit when they did. I didn't think ever someone was getting chinned in this one. I thought potentially someone might get submitted, but that was it.
And then the carnage started. Holloway, Gaethje, what more can you say? How much more can you punctuate a performance than with this?
Perfection, wasn't it? Because it was obviously a great performance from Max anyway. I'll assume the scorecards all had him going into that. But when he points to the ground, just fucking run. Don't stand and trade with him.
And he's just a moment's machine, Holloway. He had the finger pointing against Lamas already. He had teaching Ortega how to box.
Yep. On the best boxing in the year, so he missed Kattar fight.
I've forgotten how cold it was when Poirier stood up in the fifth round early and he walks up to Holloway and he's pointing down and Max gets up early and nods and says, let's do it. Yeah, very, very good. You to dominate a fight like that, point to the centre of the octagon with 10 seconds left. And it's not, when you watch it back in the slow-mo, it's not the wild swings from Holloway that it first appears. He goes double with the right hand because he's got Gaethje then leaning into it. He's dipping to get that big one over the top.
Well, it's a bit of a cheat from him, isn't it? Because when he does that, he knows he's got the boxing skills over the guy. So the other guy thinks he's just standing and slugging. And Matt's going, actually, I'm going to pick you apart still. Even when it looks like I'm, yeah, like you said, just swinging.
And then Gaethje does literally get folded like a deck chair.
Yeah, I mean, as you said on the night, but those ones where they fall forward, it's
sad to see my guy go out like
you
that.
You were a touch depressed at the time.
If someone has to do it, then Max, Leon, Gaethje, probably my favourite.
Yeah.
Favourite three out there. And then a couple of ones that are just like so far removed. Like I'm still an Alex Hernandez guy, really. Zhang Weili, Yan Xiaonan got interesting briefly and then spun back around pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Brief controversy for a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When someone is seemingly unconscious at the end of a round and carries
DC's on. Accusing them of using smelling salts.
And then smelling salts come into play. Yeah. That was more fun than I expected, actually, that I thought.
That's what Zhang Weili does.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't too one-sided, kept it honest. So, yeah, that was a good fight.
And then we have Potan just icing falls again.
Oh, that man is just...
How many times is Jamahel practiced catching the arrow and breaking it in the mirror?
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing, each time you could see it at the press conferences, at the weigh-in, obviously during Potan's walkout, his whole thing was to try and desperately look like he's not scared of this guy and to try and spook him just for Potan.
Should have maybe been a bit more scared.
Yeah, I'll probably focus more on maybe the game plan rather than the trying to spook.
How it doesn't even look like one of his big shots.
That left hook's just, he doesn't have to leave and land fully, does he? He's scary man. Having done it, I've just been nutshotted. It's just, I mean, I've seen a lot of people saying that man's life is a movie, and that can be overused, but his life is a movie.
He said afterwards that he didn't want the chance to think, and if there was a break in the action, then that would have given him a chance to think. He just wanted all focus on the game plan, back to it.
Yeah, you can, this is going to sound very obvious because he chins him 5 seconds later, but you can kind of see that he was like, laser focused and just staring at him. It was almost like he didn't want to not even stop looking at him. So yeah, the look on Jamahel Hill's face when that lands as he's looking up at him as well is
looking up at him as he's doing the celebration as well. It's very good.
So yeah, I mean, fair play to Hill. If you're gonna talk like that, if you win, it looks great. And if you lose, then you do look the fool. That's kind of the way it goes. Potan's the man.
Yes. Needs to get his merch over here because not paying that shipping to get one of his t-shirts, but they are very good.
It
t-shirts.
Is a damn shame, isn't it?
Because him and Holloway.
Those t-shirts are incredible, yeah.
But I understand why they don't do them through the UFC, because I've seen how much the UFC take. O'Malley sold out 2 ranges with them, and he said he made next to nothing.
That's so bad. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Reebok did an exclusive range for him with the tie-dye when that was his thing. And yeah, he got nish.
Fuck me.
But yeah, that was it. I mean, kind of whizzed through it, but do have Monday Night Football on, and it's been a long, long old day. So I think we'll close it there. Thank you for tuning in. As always, we'll be back next week. A lot will have happened in the meantime there. Liverpool could have had a huge comeback against Atalanta. Arsenal season could be over. Harry Kane, I'm sure, will have done some cringy Instagram post about North London being white. We'll see what happens. See you next time. Adios.